there. Welcome to Sauce Unbound. I'm your host, Anna Dana, head of growth at Sauce Group. So you're acquiring, buying wonderful Sauce businesses to take them to the next level. And here I chat with inspiring founders and experts to get an inside scoop on how they made their business a success. So today with me is Anjali, experienced CCO and CMO, former CCO of Resourcify, actually. And yeah, let's begin. Maybe welcome to the show.
Thank you, Anna. Really nice to be here.
Yeah. Well, thank you for, you know, making the time because, well, I've been seeing you all over LinkedIn forever. And you've been talking a lot about, you know, women in leadership and branding. And that's one thing that I'm very passionate about. And I think lately, the narrative is, you know, there is no more tech mode, you know, companies are being built in 5 minutes. So what you're going to win with is brand. Brand is something that is going to set you aside. And I'm like, okay, but are we all on the same page on what brand is? So what is brand?
What a question. And, you know, I think just to take a step back quickly, especially in the SaaS industry, I think, you know, B2C, D2C has kind of, you know, gotten this down path. They understand brand and they have more of a transactional type relationship with their clients. But in B2B SaaS, brand has, I think, still been left on the back burner. And only now companies are really starting to understand that you can't have these constant jumps. They have these revenue cycles that are just up and down. They do a lot of performance marketing, a lot of interesting different channels and demand gen. And now they're finally coming to terms with the fact that brand is the original revenue driver, which leads me into answering your question, what is brand? Brand is the feeling that you have when you think of a particular company. It's the feeling. So it's not just a campaign. It is the emotions. It is the reaction. And this is why all kinds of companies out there now are actually starting to create movements. It used to be 5 years ago that, especially in B2B SaaS, it was all about product marketing. And I always call it the check sheet of death, which my software is better than your software. And here's all the cool features and what we have and we don't have. And we've all seen it. And that just really doesn't play anymore. And now it's about longer term gains. And it's also keeping your cohorts of clients. So in essence, brand is the feeling that.
All right. So it's a bit more than just colors and fonts and all that we're getting in a brand book.
Exactly.
All right. So how to define it? If I'm building a company and yeah, I understand that, okay, people want to relate to me. People want to relate to me as a founder, to a product, to what I'm building, to the cause, to the vision. Yeah. How to define it? Where to start?
I always tell founders, CEOs, anyone who's willing to listen that you start with a what do you believe statement. And I always talk about the old Tony Robbins video. So for all the listeners, if you remember Tony Robbins, really great motivational speaker, he talks about people don't just buy what you buy, they believe what you believe. So a lot of companies, especially in SaaS, they talk a lot about their product and the product features, but they don't actually talk about what they believe, what they stand for, who they are. And so this is the essence. So if you're asking, how do you even start a brand? How do you create one? What is it? How do you get started? Just take out a sheet of paper and just write down very simply, what do you believe? And it's really interesting to see how many companies cannot do that. They can talk all about their product features, price, promotions. They can't talk about what they believe.
Okay. So why is it actually becoming more and more important in B2B to have a brand? Because I think the kind of the misconception that I can also very much relate to in a way, but at the same time understand how wrong it is that when we talk about B2B, we basically talk about, I don't know, Microsoft buying from Apple. Just never happens. But still, you understand, right? It's just like faceless corporations buying from other faceless corporations and vice versa. And it's definitely not that. It's still people buying from people. But yeah, why is it becoming so important?
There's a couple of reasons. So especially in B2B, I mean, you know, we've had this kind of question before where they say, oh, it's not just direct to consumer. It's like you said, these, you know, vast teams buying from other vast teams. It's people. So I tell every single person, take out your mobile phone, tell me what your favorite apps are. Most people can do that and they'll have an idea in their head. So for example, one of mine is Calm. I love that meditation app. I think it's amazing. And you start to look at their brand, what they stand for, their user experience, et cetera. B2B buyers are also B2C consumers. The behavior is the same when you're looking at that buying process. You start with what you believe. The second reason is people are starting to vote now. And when I say vote, I mean buy with their values. So this is why value selling in B2B, right, is such a big thing. People will actually, and companies will actually pay more for a product because they believe in the value that it provides. So if you can't talk about the value from the beginning and what you believe, it's very difficult, right, down the line. And then what happens is, what we've seen in the past year is a lot of companies go very deep into product marketing. They go deep into features. They're going deep into price and to benefit. And that might hold at the beginning, but it doesn't hold long term, which is why we see a lot of these ups and downs, right, in the revenue cycle.
Okay. I'm super interested. Like, what do you think, when is brand more important? Like, if we're talking B2B, right, if I'm working for a huge corporation, say, I don't know, 5 to 10,000 people, right, and I am about to purchase something fairly expensive, what do you think for this type of buyer? Is brand more important than features and the actual problem that the tool is solving? So basically, would I, as this buyer, this person, would be more prone to buy something that is super cool, but, you know, Yun has a great brand and something that I want to relate to, but, you know, it's not maybe validated by the bigger market or bigger buyers just yet? Or would I basically go after IBM and buy that just because, you know, it's that thing and I'm spending so much money, it's a bit safer? So yeah, from that perspective, I'm also kind of a bit biased. Like, yeah, I'm a person and maybe I want to be that fast mover into like buying new technology, but I also have, you know, managers above me and the brand behind me that I'm also responsible for. So how do you deal with that?
It's a really great question. So the answer I give to this question is think about your Apple MacBook. So for those listeners that use Apple, then think about the Microsoft Surface. So the Microsoft Surface tablet actually has more features. It's a more technically capable machine. By every single component, majority-wise, I would say 90% plus, it is the better machine. People still keep buying their Apple MacBooks. And I actually went into an Apple store the other day, and you see the MacBook, and I don't know what material they came out on their latest version, but it's not even as high quality of material. And people are still lining up to buy it. What's the reason? Brand. Brand, the movement, the association with the brand. So I know it's a very stereotypical example, but it's one that a lot of people can relate to. Think about Apple when they first came out with their branding campaigns. They didn't talk about this as a computer. They talked about their original campaign was think different. It was all about creating this type of movement. And so I think what e-commerce companies have been able to capitalize on for their transactional type of buying processes, B2B SaaS companies are now starting to understand the benefit. So another thing that's quite interesting, LinkedIn did a research study with Ipsos, Market Research Group, and they basically did a survey of B2B marketing leaders throughout the world. And they said, okay, what are you guys spending your money on? What are you prioritizing? Because of course, prioritization of budget, right, indicates importance, especially in B2B SaaS, and especially in an example like you're saying, Microsoft, IBM, these big companies. What is the usual go-to-market B2B SaaS marketing approach? ABM, account-based marketing, all day long going after those teams. Do you want to just guess where ABM landed in 1 through 4? 1 being the best, 4 being at least the least in what they spend. Where did ABM land?
Four, yeah.
Number four.
Yeah.
And the top thing was lead gen. Number two is brand. And the reason that it's getting more spend and more attention is because you want to make sure that you have clients that stick with you. You're looking at LTV, and you're not looking at this hyper growth, this cycle of up and down on the scale. So if you want to get an up and down on the scale, then B2B companies are going to market with product features that may or may not be built, product features that may or may not be what the customer is looking for, discounted pricing. There's many different tactics, but if you go to market with brand, it's slower at the beginning, but it's longer. It has a much longer value and your LTVs are higher. So it's quite interesting, actually. You're now seeing the shifts of ideas and the shifts of where marketing leaders are putting their money.
It does seem like it's getting more into a B2B space, which is really fascinating. I feel like we're going a little bit like back. We did the full circle and we're going back to, like, I don't know, good PR, good events, good campaigns. How do you communicate brand then?
So this is, I think, one of the hardest things. In the days now, we all get bombarded by so many digital ads. And I think whether we are, you know, in B2B companies and we're, you know, trying to buy software from somewhere else, or we're just normal consumers, it's ads, ads, ads all day long. People are now looking for authenticity when it comes to marketing, whether it's B2B or B2C, it doesn't matter. They're looking for authenticity. So some of the things that I've seen is, you know, employee, you know, type of campaigns. One that I always talk about is, it was the Hootsuite, I work from anywhere campaign. And this is more of an employer branding side. But what happens is consumers think, oh, okay, there's real people, you know, behind this company. I associate with the values. Let me do that. Other things that I start to see is associating with different authentic topics that are happening. So for example, I've seen everything from women's rights to men's health, et cetera, to, you know, postpartum depression. I've seen all kinds of different realistic topics. The next question is, how do you tie in your very boring software into something like that? We once did a campaign when I was at Intuit, and they talked about they actually made it quite funny. They talked about all of the cool features. You can do it from anywhere. You know, you can capture receipts. So they took something which was quintessentially what you call boring, which is accounting tax software, and they made it quite funny and humorous. So I think the point is to really dial into what the authentic realities and the authentic situations are. Because people they're just getting sick of being bombarded with very top level ads that are not very relevant.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're talking about storytelling. And I honestly, when I first heard the word, I was like, what a load of whatever. Like, seriously, who even chose the word storytelling for B2B? Like, I thought it was absolutely horrible. But I mean, for the lack of a better word, let's do storytelling. And yeah, how much of it is a buzzword, and how much of it is an actual, you know, something that people, especially in B2B, value? Because in B2C, I can totally understand it. And, you know, you want to relate to somebody. And in B2B, I feel like a lot of the time you want to know the features, you want to know the buttons to push, you want to solve that problem, not even because it's your problem, because sometimes, let's face it, there are buyers in the company who have nothing to do with actually using the product. So I feel like the values or the reasons for buying can be completely different. But yeah, how much of a storytelling should be involved in your B2B branding?
So this is why I call brand is the original revenue driver. And it's one of the interesting things you just said yourself, we're kind of going back, you know, in this circle back to the beginning. So regardless if we're in B2B or B2C, everyone wants to hear a story. Everyone is motivated by a story, and especially in the use case that you just stated. people that are not related, right, to the topic, have a minimal interest. Think of the situation. If you're responsible for making a purchase decision on something that you are not related to, you have no vested interest in a huge multinational corporation, somebody gives you the story about, okay, what we believe and why it matters and how it relates, and they can capture your attention. Or somebody just gives you a spec sheet on product features that you have to go look up because you don't know what those terms mean. Which one do you think you're going to read? Which one do you think that you might actually resonate with? At the end, of course, you look at costs, you look at comparison, but I'm sure you've seen like the new chart of the marketing and sales funnel is 70% of that sales funnel is determined before a client even speaks to an account executive or a sales rep. And that's all marketing. So think about if I'm trying to sell you some kind of software, any kind of software, right? The first thing you're going to do, Anna, is you're going to go to your phone, you're going to Google it, or maybe you'll ChatGPT it, which will serve up some content results, right? And you're going to look at reviews, story, whether the people are thinking about it. This is a content engine, but the back end of that content engine is creating a brand. And this is what I think that B2B, for whatever reason, didn't realize, didn't get it until recently. And then something happened, I want to say, in the last 3 years, because not only do I talk about it all the time, but you see larger B2B companies. Snowflake is a great example of doing this, a more technical type of product. And they're spending a lot of time, money, and effort on brand. And you see a lot of people starting to talk about it now and implementing it in their campaigns.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I'm just asking, I mean, honestly, I'm like the biggest believer in brand ever. But I feel like, first of all, yeah, not all of the folks might actually understand what it means. And second, a lot of people are probably also a little bit skeptical, just like I was. Well, and I wasn't skeptical about brand, but I was skeptical about the words around it because, oh my God, let's just, you know, let's just be open and honest about what we're doing and avoid all the buzz around it. But yeah, that's very interesting what you were saying. But also, you know, sometimes because I do a lot of research for events and for, you know, the podcast guests, and sometimes I would find a company that's just, you know, doesn't look too good, to be honest. Not much information anywhere. LinkedIn, I mean, basically non-existent. And then you dig deeper and you understand that it's a huge company. It's amazing. It's doing well. And, well, there's pretty much zero storytelling involved. You know, they're just very successful. So, yeah, I'm kind of curious, you know, how, not how important, but how necessary it is to invest in brand if you're a new SaaS company.
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. Academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
That's a fantastic question. I think especially for the listeners, if there's any founders or CEOs listening, the use case that you outlined is one very relevant use case, right? You have product market fit, you found your niche, you found your buyer, you have everything done and you're scaling. And I do see a lot of startups where they don't look at brand. What usually happens though at a certain stage in their growth is they hit a wall. And what we always say is, if you just go on price, you just go on features, it's a race to the bottom. Why? A different competitor can offer a lower price. Another competitor, right? They can outfeature you, or they can turn basically their product into a suite of the features that used to be your product. And you see this happen in the SaaS world all the time. What SaaS leaders are now recognizing is, yes, you can start that way and you might think it's cheaper at the beginning because you're not spending anything on brand, but you're going to hit that wall and you won't be able to get any further. Or the scenario two is you want to get further and you have to dump tons of money into what I call the paid hungry demand gen machine. And that's on the B2B and B2C side to get the results. So this is, I would say, use case of not investing in your brand. A lot of founders don't invest in brand at the beginning because they think it's too expensive. It's that old saying of not seeing the forest for the trees. Brand is something that grows over the time and stays with you. And this is why, like, you know, we said a couple of minutes ago, when you look at Apple versus Microsoft Surface, Apple just keeps pumping out the same thing every year. Microsoft Surface actually has the better product and people aren't buying it.
Yeah. And how fluid is brand? Because we finally started talking about the fact that your product market fit is not just this magical thing that you just hit and you stay there forever and your ICP can change. How do you change, or maybe how do you evolve brand?
The cool thing about brand is that it can evolve with the company over time. When you start with that core, what you believe, you can build upon it and grow with it. That's the really cool thing about storytelling. Even if you need to pivot the strategic direction of the company, you need to pivot your product, you might even need to pivot your product market fit or your ICP, your brand can grow with that. Stories change, stories evolve, and people want to listen to the story. They want to hear about it. And I think that's the fundamental thing that B2B leaders are now understanding that B2C has always known. But for whatever reason, I'm not sure why, but for whatever reason, you know, they're catching up now. And I think maybe part of that pivot has gone from the super hyper growth to the more scalable and predictable growth. People are now looking for solutions that will maybe hold the test of time and give back longer returns. Where in the hyper growth years, it was just get in your cohort of clients, bring them in, they might churn out, that's okay, not really, but that's usually what has happened. And then from there, just bring in more. And so what that did naturally is it propelled marketing leaders to do what I call these very short-term, type of clickbaity, type of campaigns, which can work in the short term, but it, like I said, it's feeding the hungry demand gen monster. And brand is something that will stick with the test of time, and people will remember it over time, will remember the stories. And one of the things I actually want to mention is I did a test, and anyone who's listening can do this same test at home. Take out ChatGPT, then take out Perplexity, and if you use Claude 2. Ask them to do a bio on your name. So say, write me a bio about Anna. Write me a bio about Andre. Look at the different tools and look at the differences and what comes up. And the interesting thing is look at the sources that it's pulling from. This is the reason why brand, not just brand, but also content is super important, because you're going to get three different versions of that story. It's an interesting space to watch.
All right. I'm going to, maybe not me, but I'm going to try it with SaaS Group for sure. Thanks. That could be fun. So you already told us about one of the mistakes that founders might be doing brand-wise, but what are the other common mistakes or, things that don't work in 2025 that you still see founders doing?
So the first mistake is not investing in brand at all. The second mistake is thinking that brand is just a bunch of colors. The third mistake is thinking that you can just put out a great video and that's it. What I saw, I would say, like 3 to 5 years ago is, I'm sure you recall, in B2B SaaS, they put out what I call these chintzy product marketing videos. And they had the really ridiculous music in the background. And basically, here's a problem. Here's our software. We're here to save the world. Great. Isn't that so fit? And this just seemed to be on repeat, repeat, repeat. And there was no storytelling going on. So product marketing is great, but product marketing is mid-funnel. It is not top of funnel, and it certainly is not going to be the bottom of funnel reason. When you bring people in top of funnel, it's going to be brand awareness, this kind of thing, product marketing will help solve your mid-funnel. And at the bottom funnel, you're really looking at that value selling, right? This is how you get people over the line. You can't have value if you don't establish value at the beginning. And so I think this connection really is what founders and CEOs are now starting to realize. And it's actually better because you can end up charging more for your product, you know, in the end. So it really has benefits. And this is why I keep saying brand and storytelling, if that's the word we're going to use, it's the gift that keeps giving.
Yeah, absolutely. 100% agree. And well, on the colors, I mean, doesn't hurt. It's fun to hear sometimes that, you know, anytime there is anything purple on LinkedIn, it's Saas Group. And I'm like, oh, you guys, that's very sweet. But yeah, obviously it's not all that. And it takes time to build it. But like you said, it keeps on giving. And I'm super happy on, you know, the way it works for us. But I have a few more questions because, you know, we originally met because of Women of Saas, and we're both members, and, you know, you're also very vocal about women in leadership. And we started this, I think, well, not to sound overconfident, but awesome initiative at Saas Group, where we try to make it a bit more female founder friendly, you know, create the same opportunities, make sure that female leaders have somebody to talk to, you know, kind of go about their exit options and exit strategies and really have this like safe space. But yeah, I mean, you're also a female leader in Saas, very male dominated industry. Yeah, could you tell me how you got involved in the kind of, you know, female leadership movement in the first place? And what do you see now? Like, what are the trends? Is there actually a movement or is it fairly stagnant?
Okay, big question. So I got involved, I just fell into it. So it's just, you know, really one of those things. As everyone else, you're climbing up the ladder, you're going through your experiences in different companies. And I started to make observations. How come some men are getting promoted here if women are not getting promoted there? Why is, for example, it's very stereotypical, but sometimes very true, where they say that men are promoted based off of potential, but women have to be promoted based off of results. You know exactly what I'm talking about. So all of these things I had observed myself as an operator coming up through the ranks. And I said to myself, okay, well, if I ever got into a position of leadership, I would do my best not only to promote women in leadership, but also to help other women. Because I think that's one of the things that we don't see as much is so many women at the top and not just being there, but thriving and being vocal. It's important for people to see somebody up there as an example, say, I can reach that too. I can do that too. And also have somebody talk about what it really takes. Like what are the, what I call hard truths or authentic realities of what it takes. So that's how I got into it. What do I see happening now? You know, I thought in the year 2025, there would be more female leaders, especially in tech and especially in SaaS, but the numbers are actually going in the opposite direction, that there is less. And usually what we're seeing is we get women into certain leadership roles, but the amount of women that are staying in those roles, I think, and they're not staying for a certain period of time. And it doesn't have anything to do with life choices. It has to do with the lack of support for women at the top. So just things about how people are perceived, how people speak in meetings, how people negotiate strategic initiatives, just the amount of, I would say, overall support. I also do a lot of mentoring for all kinds of women across, you know, Europe, whether they're in the top leadership position, or I even do mentoring for people who are just starting their careers. And one of the things that still holds true, which is very unfortunate, is that, you know, women who come across as too strong, they're viewed as too aggressive, or women who are maybe more quiet, more polite, you know, they're viewed as incompetent. And it seems to be this dichotomy at one end of the scale or the other. And I also want to point out that I see it with men. You know, I think it's important for any of the men listening to this one of the things I see with men is men that are kind, they are caring, they are considerate. They're not encouraged to exhibit those behaviors because they're seen as maybe weak. So we have this kind of double standard thing going on. I think it's more characterized with the women, but I also see an issue that the men sometimes are struggling as well. So I think my overall message is we collectively, as men and women together, working together, we collectively need to do a better job to help each other.
SaaS Group is partnering with SaaS Talk USA, taking place May 13th to 14th in Austin, Texas. This is where heads down SaaS founders and their teams move their business forward. As a partner, we have 30% discount available to share with our network. Use code SaaSGroup30 in all capital letters and see you there.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want to sound too harsh, but sometimes I do see a lot of people try to make some kind of movement, help female leaders or try to create a stage for them. And there's very little response. And I'm like, okay, but it should work both ways. It shouldn't just be, oh, please, please take it, and we will create a place for you and we will create this environment for you. That's why, what we are doing at SaaS Group, for example, it's not that we're constantly now hunting for specifically female-owned businesses. No, it's still, a hunt for the best business out there. What we're doing is we're making sure there is an opportunity to step up, an opportunity to take that chance and a person to talk to. If you're more comfortable talking to a woman, then absolutely, by all means, we have female leaders within SaaS Group and you can, but I'm not going to drag you. I'm not going to beg anyone but to your point of women not staying in leadership positions, I also am looking always for more female leaders to have here on the podcast. And what happened at one point, I realized I would find some kind of a list of female founders and I would just go through it. I will go and scrape LinkedIn, go to every page. And most of them, 80% maybe, are no longer there. They went to consulting. They went to do marketing. They went to do some kind of other operational thing at another company, but they're not no longer founders. That's a very interesting dynamic.
It's huge. And especially with female founders, I think this is even a deeper issue. And also women in VC and private equity firms as well. I'm sure you saw the recent Project Europe investment. And it's awesome that Europe wants to step up their game. So I 100% support it. But I'm sure that you also saw some of the posts going around LinkedIn saying basically there was one post, Project Europe, do better. Where are the women? And I think one woman actually put up like a picture of all the guys that were investing, like circled, the one woman. This is something where I think we need to be more aware about how we go about the decisions and what the impact is of not only what we're saying, but what we're doing. That, I think, Project Europe was a great opportunity, right, for the tech leaders in Europe to come together and say, hey, here's a diverse group. And I don't mean just men and women, diverse of all backgrounds and, different countries. There's so many countries in Europe. To come together and say, hey, we are unified and we stand together and we have one voice and one message. And I just think that opportunity, didn't happen. So, yes, female founders have it very, very tough. And there are, there's different ways in the way sometimes men and women communicate when they're doing pitches, how they communicate when they're negotiating for funding or convertible loans or however it is they're getting their funding, or even, their strategies across the company. And I think that there just needs to be, like you said, equal opportunity and equal access. But if we have a system right now, which we have primarily male dominated, right, VCs and PE firms, it keeps going. So I think that we need to really just be aware on all levels. And I don't think this is about filling quotas, nothing like that, but it's just about having equal opportunity, equal access. And I just want to see more examples of, you know, a diverse landscape.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's it. We don't have to maybe show more of the opportunities because they are there. I mean, not in every company, of course, let's face it, there are companies that are male dominated, male led, and they want to be that way and led them. But I think what we need to show women is that you need to step up. You also need to take initiative because if it's there, why not?
Exactly. Right? But I think to go back to your point of why we're seeing more women who they get into a leadership position, but we see more women not staying in those leadership positions is the feedback I've heard anecdotally and then also the research that's done is there's just not enough support for them. So a speech I always give in my, you know, either if it's panels or keynotes is called the only one, right? The only one, you know, in the meeting, the only one in the conference room, the only one in the boardroom, the only, like, over and over and over again. And I think we just need to, I would love to see a day where that is not true.
Absolutely. But again, just, you know, just an example that I lived through myself. We host these events for founders, and there was one event in Germany, and I was really trying to get some female founders there because, you know, I knew that, and I mean, in Germany, it's next level, seriously. Well, you are there, so, you know, it's not just male dominated, it's a male industry, that's it. There are so few female founders, and I was just scrambling to get a few, and I would get one, and then I would get another, and another would say, oh, you know what? There is very little diversity, so I won't come. And I'm like, yeah, but if you don't come, there is no diversity. And there were like a few answers that are the same. And I ended up being alone on a boat with 42 men, and, you know... It was a great community still, but how ridiculous is that? And that's what I'm saying. If there is an opportunity to, you know, we're talking about, you know, showing off more female leaders, there is this opportunity today. There it's going to be you and me. And next year it's going to be six of us. And next year, maybe we'll get to 30%. You know, I don't know. It's hard to fight. I'm going on a rant here, but.
No, I totally understand. I think it's being aware that you want to have diversity and being very poignant about going after it. So I know what it's like to search for, whether it's female candidates, female speakers, et cetera. Really sitting down with the men at the beginning and saying, look, we want to have a diverse event. We want to have a diverse meeting. This is how we're going to do it. And involve those people as well in finding. I've had everywhere from meeting attendees, colleagues, recruiters, panel speaking organizers saying, we just can't find any women. I'm like, really? I just take out LinkedIn, search for what you want. There's a woman. There's a woman. There's a woman. Did you talk to her? And it really just pushed the issue because there are. I think it's the same reason where, you know, sometimes we see founders saying we can't find a female, I'm making this up, a female CTO or, you know, whatever it might be. Yes, you can. But sometimes you have to go that extra step. And so I think that's what's really important. But it's not just getting them, it's keeping them there and creating that environment, which I think also goes to, you know, to what you said. So it's difficult, but it's not insurmountable. It can be done, which is why we have these organizations like Women of SaaS, really fantastic group. And there's a couple of other ones I belong to, Female Factor out of Vienna, Femme Palette, they're out of Prague. Really, really great groups. And it's all about supporting women to thrive and supporting them to have a voice.
Yeah, absolutely. We're also collaborating with the Wednesday Women in the U.S. now for SASDoc, which I'm super excited about, and hope, you know, to get some ideas on what they think would work to, you know, to live through that initiative that we have. Also, maybe, you know, talk to a few female founders out there. But yeah, not easy, definitely.
But it can be done.
But can be done. But just a couple of questions that I have for you. There are usuals here. And, you know, in your case, you can make it about your, you know, your work with female leaders or your work with branding and marketing. What has been your biggest win and biggest failure?
Ooh, biggest win. I have a couple of them, but actually one of them that I'm very proud of is a few companies ago I had joined. There's a content leader. She knows who she is. She's fantastic. But she felt, like many women do, that she didn't have a voice within the company. And she was really struggling with her public speaking and getting herself out there. And what I'm most proud of is working with her to build up her skills, her confidence, et cetera, to the point where now she's a powerhouse. Now she has the biggest microphone, and I'm just astonished at her growth. So for me, it's one of the biggest accomplishments, because to see how you can help change not just a person's career, but the mentality that they have on themselves for the positive. I think that's absolutely amazing. One of the biggest mess ups, you know, I first started at Amazon, so not SaaS, but when I first started at Amazon, I was in the international expansion division. You're supposed to know SQL coming in. I knew no SQL. I was responsible for this international shopping page. And they said, yeah, just make some changes to the page. Okay, me with no SQL. I go in and I make some changes, crash the page, crash it a few times, cost the company millions of dollars. And afterwards came back and I thought I was getting fired. And they were just like, no, it happens all the time. Just keep going. At least you tried. So I was like, okay. But the sheer terror, you know, after that, and then because at Amazon, I mean, every minute the website's down is, you know, a lot of money. So, but we fixed it. We moved on. But wow, what a moment.
Yeah, but then probably also your moment of having the support and understanding how it helps you to move on. So that might have been a bit of a shaping moment. All right. So the last question is always about a hack. So it can be anything. It can be, you know, being in those leadership positions. It can be about, again, about branding, something that founders can do. Anything that worked or still is working for you that you can share?
My biggest hack, and so for any person that's listening that has ever listened to me before, my biggest hack is what I call the inner strength. This is this quiet resilience. It's not about being the loudest person in the room in a meeting or anything like that. It's the quiet resilience to keep going. The reason I say this, especially for the founders that are listening to this, this is the one thing they don't teach you in business school or any school, but the single biggest thing that will get you through your career. So also when people ask me, like, what's your favorite book? I don't quote any business book. There's tons of them, tons of great ones out there. My favorite, Paulo Coelho, The Alchemist. So it's all about a person's journey of self-discovery and self-enlightenment. So it's these, sometimes people call them soft skills, but I actually think they're the hardest skills in the world to master. But if you can master this quiet resilience, you are going to get 99.9% further than everyone else. And especially for founders, it's not always the smartest person in the room, the most intelligent, the loudest. It's the person that never gives up.
Yeah, persistent matters. Yeah, that's a good, well, not really a hack, but a philosophy maybe to follow a mindset. All right, awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing. And thanks for all the wisdom that you just unloaded on branding and marketing. I really enjoyed it. And, you know, sorry, I was kind of, you know, bombarding you with questions because I just wanted to get to the bottom of it. But yeah, great to have you here and hope we can do it again sometime.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for being here and take care.
That was yet another awesome conversation on SaaS Unbound. We're always looking for new guests to share their experiences. We mostly talk with bootstrapped SaaS founders, and if you're one, reach out to me directly at anna@saas.group or find me on LinkedIn. If you're not bootstrapped or even not SaaS but have a great story to tell, we want to hear from you too. And obviously, SaaS Unbound wouldn't be possible without the SaaS Group, a founder-friendly private equity company that buys awesome businesses that people love to take them to even greater success. If you're thinking about selling your company or just exploring your options, feel free to visit saas.group, fill in the form, and expect a response in under 24 hours.